I went to high school in South Philadelphia in the 90s, arguably the late heyday of the punk scene on South Street. Places like Zipperhead, Pearl Art, and Sub-Zero were the after-school haunts for the weirdos I mostly hung around. And we certainly knew about South Street's earlier incarnation of the 60s, made famous by the Orlons. South Street has been the youth hangout for decades.
I've always been interested in South Street from a feet-on-the-ground kind of perspective.
This is Jeremy Tenenbaum, who's now director of marketing for the architecture firm VSBA.
I've been going there since the 90s when I was in college. Many of us have been. Many of us have a South Street era of our lives. And I don't think that I was particularly different in that regard.
While poking around the VSBA offices, which is the partnership of Philadelphia husband and wife architects Robert Venturi and Denise Scott Brown, Jeremy discovered some photos of a very different South Street from just before its hippie days.
It has lots of commercial life, but it has a more workaday commercial life than we would recognize now. More hardware stores, more daycare centers, more sort of workaday needs of people that live in the community. It's not quite the tourist destination that we would recognize from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s.
What Jeremy eventually learned is that Denise Scott Brown herself took the photos as part of an effort to keep South Street from becoming a highway. Why was South Street spared that fate? And what was the lasting effect on the neighborhood? I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. This is The Why. The discovery of the photos sent Jeremy on a journey through South Street's history. He wrote a story about that history and the photos for Hidden City Philadelphia. Let's go back through history a little bit. I also remember South Street from this period in the 90s. Obviously, it went through a lot of iterations before that. Can you just describe its early days?
Sure. South Street was originally called Cedar Street and was William Penn's delineated boundary, southern boundary of Philadelphia. That was 1683. It, through the 19th century, became a locus of the African-American community, and it was a thriving neighborhood of black businesses and residences. With the Western European immigration waves of the 19th century, we began to see populations of the Irish and Italian and Polish and Russian and Jews and many others who came to the immigration station at the river and began populating the neighborhoods along the eastern edge of South Street. And that had the effect of displacing much of the African-American population west of Broad Street, also on South Street.
South Street is a community of communities, and they're like beads on a string.
This is Denise Scott Brown, who's originally from South Africa. She's now retired from her practice. Her husband and partner, Robert Venturi, who died in 2018, had once run a produce market his family owned on South Street.
We were walking down South Street, and there was a group of old people, you know, Irish, sitting on the doorsteps. They looked up at us. We looked at them. And they said, "Where are you folks from?" So I said, "We come from very far away. We come from South Africa." "Well, we reckoned from your accents that you was from out of town."
When did the plan for the Crosstown Expressway emerge?
So it began to emerge as early as the 1930s, when the Philadelphia Planning Commission had outlined the need for a connector between I-95 and 76. And the way that they had devised to connect the two was with a ring road, with a northern segment connecting the two roads and a southern segment connecting the two roads. But they were not specifically delineated. We didn't know specifically where those connector roads would be. And initially it was understood that the South Street and Lombard Street zone would be the southern boundary of that connector. It evolved over time until Bainbridge and South Street were going to be slated for demolition.
I'm going to clarify the geography a little bit. Lombard is a block north of South Street and Bainbridge is a block south.
Yes. And think about the neighborhoods north of South Street and the neighborhoods south of South Street. And you begin to see that it's being shifted away from neighborhoods that have the power and the wealth to defend themselves. Society Hill was similarly slated for highway interventions that they fought, that they won, because they had the power and they had the money and they had the influence to keep highways and other intrusions out of their neighborhood. South Street was a strip of poor immigrants and African Americans and those who did not have the representation and power to defend themselves.
When you see the original transportation studies that proposed that, they said the highway would be a good separation between center city and undesirable land usages, I'm quoting them, to the south. And the community said he means us.
And so how did those communities react when this plan emerged?
They began to clear out. They reacted by fleeing the wrecking ball. Real estate values plummeted. It essentially created a blight atmosphere, which became a further argument for why that neighborhood should be targeted for demolition. Because, look, it's a blighted neighborhood.
Right. It was kind of self-perpetuating.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, because real estate values plummeted and because the plan dragged on so long, other people saw this as an opportunity to pick up real estate at a relatively good rate. And so you saw artists and oddballs and people that didn't have a lot of money but really would have liked to have a, you know, a vegan grocery store. Mm-hmm. And so there was a mini renaissance in the mid-1960s. And many people who think back to the heyday of the 1960s think of that era. But the wrecking ball was still hovering just out of reach. It was just in the planning stages at that point.
The groundwork was laid for this highway to happen, and yet we know that it didn't happen. So what stopped it?
Alice Lipscomb and others founded the Citizens Committee to Preserve and Develop the Crosstown Community, the CCPDCC, in 1968. She had a wonderful ability to both represent her community. She was leading a community organization in Hawthorne toward the western edge of Eastern South Street.
And when she saw the conditions there, she said, I've got to do something. So she began working for that Hawthorne community, which is probably the poorest over there.
But she had an amazing ability to bring together people from other contiguous neighborhoods that crossed cultural boundaries, that crossed ethnic boundaries, economic boundaries.
White people and black people, if they have a cause together, can find each other's individuality. And now you're not working with that black guy. You're working with Joe Temin, the storekeeper, who can help me do such and such.
And so she brought people together very effectively.
So can you describe, you know, what they did? Like what kind of action are we talking about?
Sure. They picketed City Hall. They contacted every individual with any power whatsoever in an effort to explain the benefit of not going ahead with this plan, the harm that it would cause. Very often the harm being that people were being displaced from their homes and their businesses without any plan whatsoever to accommodate them in any other setting.
This whole group of people is going to be out on the streets.
More on that after a break.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. I'm talking with Jeremy Tenenbaum, Director of Marketing for the architecture firm VSBA, about the fight over a proposed highway in the 1960s and 70s over South Street. Why did the committee go to Denise Scott Brown and Robert Venturi? Why did they solicit the firm?
The young firm, Venturi & Rauch, had been making a name for itself for a little while, and Denise and Bob had just begun a study with Yale students of Las Vegas, investigating the city from an architectural standpoint.
This is Las Vegas, known throughout the world, where nighttime is truly fun time.
Which was a very rebellious thing to do then, because Las Vegas was seen as an unpleasant subject for architectural study. But it did reflect Denise and Bob's ability to appreciate different types of communities, different taste cultures. And so when Alice somewhat reluctantly went to any architect, because she was worried about the impact that an architect might have on our community. She said to Denise,
"If you can love South Street in this way, we will trust you with it." That was a great compliment for me. We need someone, she was talking, there on the team to argue for us about the fact that they either needed the housing or they had to leave this housing, and to be an expert about architecture and to talk about it. So I wasn't meant to be the planner of the whole thing, but at the end, I really was running it all.
And so what were they proposing for South Street?
Denise Scott Brown led Venturi and Rauch's study. They discovered that South Street had a lot of very strong bones.
I began taking photographs of South Street to get ready, and I'd show her things and I'd say, "Oh, I love this. I love that. Ratty old housing with bright red, green and yellow paint on it, or a lovely shaped window. I just adore it. I'm so enthusiastic."
It had a row house skeleton, so to speak, that certainly required renovation, certainly required time and money and attention, but had all the bones necessary to be reclaimed.
And what did they do with that plan? When we say put it forward, like how did that kind of like make its way to decision makers?
So when the committee went to the state and to the city, they required materials to substantiate their argument that the street had viable redevelopment options. They needed proof. And to a great degree, that's what Denise and her team provided.
My job was to testify for what is there and to come up with what could be. And being an advocate for this client, there were certain principles that I had learned from social planners and worked out for myself. There were aesthetic ones where I'd say, "Look, I'm an expert, I'm an architect, I have a reputation. You think this is ugly, I say this is beautiful."
And what happened at that point?
The fight did not stop. Even at the city level, once local city leaders began to realize that they were on the losing end of this fight, the fight went on. For example, when Mayor James Tate was facing a difficult re-election campaign in 1967, City Hall was being picketed at that point. And he essentially said, "Let the people have a win. Let the people have a victory." Because he's not going to go down with this argument.
He made that unilateral decision to stop it.
The state, however, still had it on their budget. The state thought that it was a viable project. The state transportation boards and so forth proceeded ahead. So then they had to approach the state. Certainly by 1973, 1974, it had been removed from even the state budgets. And by then it was as dead as it was going to get. But it took a very long time to get there.
We know a lot of the rest of this history personally. We know what South Street kind of became in the 80s and 90s, this sort of like punk scene that grew out of the hippie scene. You know, I remember a lot of Mohawks, piercings, and skaters on South Street, like every kind of weirdo. And
you saw me.
Yeah. I think I saw you there.
That's there we are.
Right. So do you have a sense of like how this counterculture endured through this fight, or were those two like connected, do you think?
I think streets like South Street undergo generational change, and as long as they have the ability to accommodate new businesses, new cultures, they will. I work in Manayunk, and Main Street in Manayunk has undergone waves of these changes from its Renaissance in the late 80s and early 90s. It never had a punk phase that I'm aware of, but it certainly underwent oscillations from artistic repurposing of old buildings to small shops, mom and pop shops, to boutiques, to chain stores, and then the collapse of chain stores and the collapse of the real estate market and empty storefronts. And then the rents become low enough that the artists move back in again. And then you have that very nice, sine wave of real estate development.
Obviously, it was this activism that kept this highway project from happening. Can you see that spirit of activism in South Street in the decades after and today?
I think that there are market forces and cultural forces that drive a lot of the evolution of South Street. So I don't know whether or not activism has driven future development per se. I do know that the effect of the original activism that prevented the Crosstown Expressway from moving through has been evidenced in South Street today because it's still there, because it has been allowed to exist, because without the profound and lasting effect of that activism, we wouldn't have a South Street.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you so much.
You can find Jeremy's article at hiddencityphila.org. The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari. We had editing help on this episode from Eugene San. Our intern is Kelly Brennan. Tweet your memories of South Street to @ Shai Ben Yaakov. We'll be back Monday.